Welcome into the What's Up Peoria podcast, where we are dedicated to introducing you to the people, places, and events that happen in our amazing city. This is where those who work in Peoria can connect with those who live in Peoria. We hope you discover something new with us. Here are your hosts, Jenny and Patrick, on the What's Up Peoria podcast.
We are so excited. This is our first solo podcast that we're going to be doing. And I'm here with my co-host, the Poet Master, Patrick.
Thank you so much, Jenny. I am here with our cherished children's librarian, Jenny Gordon, otherwise known as Commissioner Gordon, or just the commish, which I will refer to her as from here on out.
I love it. And we have here today a special guest who is no stranger to the library because he has done programming with us before. It is John Hyatt from the West Valley Astronomy Club. Say hi to all the folks in Peoria.
Hello, Peoria. Great to be here this morning.
Yeah. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about what exactly is the West Valley Astronomy Club? Like, do you know the history of your organization?
I had to look up a little history.
Okay.
Which was great. It actually started in 1986.
Wow.
So coming up on 40 years in Sun City West. And it grew and then expanded past just being a Sun City West club.
Mm-hmm.
And they've kind of branched out and had a couple of different locations. And most recently at a church pretty close to Sun City West.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's back. Located in Sun City West in the Beardsley Recreation Center, but it's still open to the public. And so it's basically just a group of people that are interested in astronomy. It's a club, and we get together once a month, September through May, to discuss things about astronomy. We usually have a monthly speaker come in and talk, and it's about 100 people.
Okay. Very nice.
And how long have you been a part of the organization, John?
I actually, I moved down here about 5 years ago. I joined the club right about the time COVID hit. And that put a damper on the club's activities, obviously. So that was, 4 years ago, approximately. And so we didn't do too much that first year. And then I started to get involved. And I'm kind of in charge of the outreach for the club.
Did you have a background in astronomy beforehand or no?
Well, just completely as an amateur, but we lived up in Colorado, and I had volunteered at an observatory in Berthoud, Colorado, Little Thompson Observatory, for about 10 years, and went from basically cleaning the bathrooms to running the telescopes and doing group presentations with 30 or 40 kids and adults. So it's a lot of fun over that 10 years before we moved down here.
When did you sort of first discover your love of the night sky? How long had you been an amateur or hobbyist astronomer?
Yeah, well, this was really fun to reflect on the other day when I was going through these questions. I actually got interested in 1960. I was about 5 years old, and I remember going out in the backyard. I don't remember what house it was at, and we saw the Echo 1 satellite. It wasn't the first U.S. satellite. It was a big Mylar balloon that went into orbit, and they bounced radio signals off of it. So I didn't really know all of that at the time, but I remember seeing it and getting quite excited. And then I was given a toy telescope, kind of similar to what you have in your...
Oh, the one that I use for my displays.
Yeah, except it was probably made out of cardboard in 1960 instead of plastic. but I got just totally excited about that. And then a couple of years later, when I was about 8 years old, my grandfather gave me actually a pretty nice 3-inch refracting telescope. And I had that all the way through high school. And actually kind of tried to build a little observatory on the top of my garage when I was, I think, in third grade. So it's 7, 8, 9 years old. It was basically just a piece of 4x8 plywood, but I used to get up there with my best buddy and we'd look at the moon and Jupiter, and that was about it. That's about all I was smart enough to find.
That's amazing.
So that was kind of my introduction. And I was always interested in the space race.
That was a big deal. That's what I was going to think you were going to say, but
you
taught me a little history I didn't even know. I'm going to research this Mylar balloon.
Yeah, Echo 1 is the name of it. They actually had two of them. And it was before communication satellites. They actually bounced signals off of the balloon.
Okay.
Transcontinentally. And television signals, even. Hmm. So it was all experimental before the first communication satellites.
Yeah. You do star parties here for us at the library, as well as other places. Now, before people get excited and think it's their chance to meet Taylor Swift, what is a star party exactly?
Well, a star party for us with the club is basically a chance for some of our volunteers who have telescopes to bring them out and share them with the public. So really our example here in Peoria is really great. That's kind of how we got started with the libraries. It was by the time I came on, and we had the star party at the roof of the parking garage. Mm-hmm. So we have about, I'd say out of our 100 volunteers, we have about 20 volunteers that are interested in our outreach. Okay. And will actually are willing to bring their telescopes out. And so we might have 5 to 10 telescopes on a typical star party. So we would bring, and this is an evening star party. Mm-hmm. We would bring those out and set them up. And those 5 to 10 telescopes can handle a crowd of like between 50 and a couple hundred people. Pretty easily. We can actually handle more.
Yeah, we generally cap it at 75 just so that way we can keep a good track of who's there.
Yeah, but we've had a couple of pretty wild ones kind of out in a public area, like in a park where we've had 200 or 300 people.
And is that a members only thing, or can anybody come?
No, so our outreach is for the public. Now, some of yours, Jenny, I think have been by invitation to your patrons.
Yeah. Well, and then you have the ones where you go out into dark spots, right? Are those considered star parties too?
Yeah, that's a little different.
Okay.
The public star parties, and particularly when it's with like the library, they kind of host, those groups kind of host us. Like the Peoria Library. So you guys kind of do the publicity to your patrons. Mm-hmm. And we put the information on our website, but we don't do really anything more than that. But then we do also have star parties in a darker area. It's about halfway out to Wickenburg. And those are also open to the public, but it's kind of hard for the general public to find it because it's
out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's right. And it's basically just on our website. It's kind of more for our members, but it's not restricted to our members. And those are a little bit smaller, usually maybe 20 or 30 people. It's not a real big area, and it's in the dark.
Yeah.
It's pretty dark, I should say. So those are kind of the two main star party types that we have. And then we also have had some daytime events.
Yes.
So we had those here at the Peoria Library, which have been
really
fun.
Yeah, I wanted
fun.
To do those last year because we were having solar eclipses. So we had sun parties instead of star parties.
So then we bring a little bit different equipment. We'll talk about that later, I guess. But so we've done those as well. And we've done that at a school in Surprise a couple of times as well. We haven't done that recently for second graders. Mm. That's been kind of fun.
Speaking of telescopes and tools, you know, people are, you know, they go to an event like this, they're super excited. They go to Walmart, they go to Target, they get themselves a telescope. Are they actually able to see anything with that kind of telescope, or is that just $20 they threw out the window?
Is this a trick question?
Not meant to be.
Well, let's put it this way. For $150, you try to buy a telescope that has, you know, like 400 power magnification, and it shows a picture of, you know, Saturn. It looks like the Hubble Space Telescope. That is not what you're going to get. And that's the $150 telescope that ends up in the closet gathering dust. Typically, they're made at a low price point. The optics are typically not that good. And the little finder scopes are really hard to use if there even is one. And the tripods are always cheap. That's really almost the worst part of it, because if you do find something, then trying to keep it in the eyepiece so the next person can take a look is really, really hard to do. Now, that said, if you've got one of those telescopes in the closet, my advice is bring it to a club meeting. We usually have one club meeting a year where we try to help people with their telescopes. Sometimes it's hard to even adjust those. But take it out in the backyard while it's still light out and find a tree or a telephone pole, you know, like a quarter of a mile away, and practice a little bit and see how clear that is. Sometimes it's kind of surprising. Even with a cheap telescope, I've helped a couple of people, and, you know, it's so out of whack, like the image is even coming through the eyepiece, and then we kind of get it fixed for them, That's called collimation. And all of a sudden, oh, there's the tree. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. And then go look at that first quarter moon. Try something at night to kind of get a little feel, you know, I mean, not at night, even in the evening. Try to get a little feel for it. And then take a look at that first quarter moon. That's a good, or whatever moon, any phase of the moon, but that's kind of the best. But just work on something. Start simple. Take a look at the moon and see what you can see. Now, it may be such a cheap telescope that it's kind of not really worth it. But that's kind of my thoughts on a telescope is better than no telescope. But people can get real frustrated with cheap telescopes.
Yeah, I know I have for sure.
So
I have one with one of those little viewfinders like you're talking about. I guess it's great that it has one at all. But yeah, it's very hard to locate things. And the tripod, like you said, the slightest motion at all, the tiniest little bump or whatever, and you're all of a sudden in a completely different part of the sky. Like it's really hard to get it to keep it steady.
Yeah. Actually, at one of your star parties, Jenny, is kind of how I got started on the library telescope program. Because I had one parent in particular just kind of sticks to my mind. It was a mom, and she said, "Oh, my son is just so excited about this stuff. He just is reading books, and what kind of telescope should I buy?" And it wasn't the only time, but that one really stuck in my mind, and I was like, what's the answer to that? And I used to say, well, you know, you get a 6-inch or an 8-inch, you know, and get this and get that. And it's like, man, that is really not a very good answer. Because how interested is the child really going to be in that? So now my answer is, don't buy a telescope. First of all, go to your local library and see if they've got a telescope you can check out. What a deal. You know, it really is fantastic. Try that first, and then see if there's enough interest to go from there. Or go to an astronomy club and find out if they have a star party, because that's a way to look through some telescopes, and that may be all that you need.
It's great advice. My daughter decided that after she fell in love with Taylor Swift that she was going to play guitar, and I got her guitar, and that lasted, you know, like about a week. So yeah, check out that telescope first, and before you waste your money, make sure that interest is for real.
Yeah, so you mentioned earlier, so we're on telescopes that look at the night sky, but on your website it talks about a solar telescope. So I know what that means, but could you explain to the regular man on the street what that means?
Sure. Well, of course, telescopes are designed to gather light. We don't want to look at the sun anyway.
No.
So we never look at the sun, even just with our naked eye. You can damage your retinas and eyes in just a few seconds even. But a telescope makes that even worse, because it might magnify the power of the sun maybe 1,000 times.
Yeah, that's why I remember you telling me the full moon, you don't like doing star parties then, because it absorbs so much of even the moonlight that it would actually hurt your eyes.
It actually is kind of uncomfortable to look at the full moon through even a small telescope. It's so bright. So we have, for our telescopes, and I'll just kind of use mine as a reference, I have an 8-inch Celestron telescope. That tracks things in the sky, so it makes it easy to, you know, watch. I have what's called a white light filter that goes over the outside covering of the mirror. It's actually the whole telescope tube, so only about 1/1000th of the light from the sun gets through to the optics inside the telescope. And that allows us to see sunspots primarily. And really, right now is a real good time for that, as a matter of fact, because the sun is pretty close to its maximum amount of sunspots. It goes through a cycle. And I don't know if it's right now or it's within a year. I'm not sure exactly where we are. It's about an 11-year cycle. So there's a lot of sunspots to see. That's kind of exciting. So if you have that kind of a setup and you hear that there's a big sunspot, which I have like a website that, you know, emails me when there's stuff like that going on. If I'm ambitious enough, I can run out in my backyard and set my telescope up and take a look at it. So that's a white light filter.
Okay. And are those pretty readily available? Yeah.
You tend to probably want to use a telescope, maybe it's a website that sells telescopes. There's several that are reputable, so you have to be a little bit careful about that.
Okay. aside from a telescope, which is obviously, you know, the most obvious instrument that someone who's looking at the sky would be using, what other tools are out there for someone who wants to take a look at the night sky? If you've got... We used to sell, I worked at a bookstore for a really long time. We sold star wheels. I assume if you've got an app on your phone, you don't need one of those anymore.
Well, yeah. So to answer your question about star wheels, they're great and they work. But one of the problems is they're kind of hard to use if you're in the city, because you have to be able to see stars to be able to kind of jump from one spot to the next.
Hard to orient yourself.
It's kind of hard to get oriented. Yeah, they do work. But the apps on your phone, almost everybody's got a phone now. And there's several apps, and I'll mention a couple here. They really are helpful because it can get you oriented. So, for example, hopefully before September, which we're getting pretty close to now, there is supposed to be a nova in the sky, and it's going to be a nova that we can see with our naked eye. That has never happened in my lifetime. And it's going to be in the Corona Borealis. Well, I know where the Corona Borealis is, but I have a heck of a time finding it in my backyard, and I'm not kidding. It's just dim enough that it's kind of hard to see. This nova will be about as bright as a North Star. So it'll be kind of exciting. It'll be in the news. So how do you find it? Oh, let's go out and take a look. Well, an app on your phone is really great. So my sister-in-law actually got me onto a one that I'll mention, and there are lots of them out there. Skyview Light is a free one. And our grandniece is just about 4 years old. She has just become fascinated with it, and part of it is the pictures. And she gets excited about the pictures and the stories that go along with the pictures. But I think the pictures is the big draw.
Definitely.
She can hold the phone up and see the constellations. So that's really a good one. My favorite one is called Stellarium, and I've used that for about 10 years. They have a phone app version of it. There's a free one, and they also have a paid one, but the free one is great. And what's nice about it, I like the graphics a little bit better. I think they're probably a little bit better maybe for adults. But the really nice thing is you can, with a pinch, you can zoom in. So if you're like trying to see the Orion's Nebula, you can kind of zoom into it and actually see pictures of it. So that's really nice. And also, they have a version that works on the computer, which is very helpful. And it's open source free software. And then Sky Safari is kind of the ultimate one. And I'm still trying to learn how to use that one. It's a little bit more complicated. But they have about three levels, between a couple of bucks and like $20. But that's a very popular one as well. The other question is, that kind of goes along with this, is, well, what are you going to look at? There's a lot of stuff going on up there, and it keeps changing every month, right? So when I used to do these basically group meetings up in the observatory up in Colorado, I would have to prepare kind of a viewing sequence for the night's activities. And two things that I would use, and this is completely free, and this is kind of a version of the Star Wheel. It's skymaps.com, and it's, they have a free version. You can download a monthly chart, and it shows you the orientation of kind of all the interesting objects in the sky on a month-to-month basis. But the other thing that it does that's great is it shows objects that are naked eye, binocular level, and then telescope level.
Oh, that's a nice distinction.
And even for a big 18-inch telescope that we had at the observatory, I would usually be looking at binocular objects because they are kind of some of the brightest interesting objects in the sky. So that's a great resource, skymaps.com. And then NASA, through the Hubble telescope, has a site and they are, a monthly, I guess, I don't know if it's a podcast, I'm not sure. It's on YouTube, it's on their own site. It's called Hubble's Tonight Sky. And it's, I just love it. And it just goes through three or four of the most interesting things up in the night sky on a month-to-month basis. And I used to literally print out my little sky map, and then I would put on the Hubble site's presentation, and I would circle three or four things. And that would be my list of things to look at for the night sky. Because, it's again, if you have a small telescope, like a library telescope, little telescope that you bought, it can be pretty hard to find some of these dim objects. So kind of pick up a couple of easy ones. And there's some really a surprising, some kind of exciting things that you can see even with a small, inexpensive telescope or binoculars.
That's fantastic. Some great resources there for all you amateur astronomers out there. So since we are here at the library today, for our last question before we hit our Poetry Corner segment, feel like I'd be remiss if I failed to ask you if you had a favorite astronomy related book or author you'd like to recommend, either nonfiction or maybe a science fiction novel that really got you thinking or maybe inspired you.
Yep, I got one. So when I was, I think I was 7 years old, so it's either six or seven, about 1960, I went to our local library to check out a book. And the first book I ever checked out, and I don't know why or how I found this, it was I, Robot by Isaac Asimov.
Oh, I love that book. I love that book.
Great book. So the librarian says, well, I'm not sure if you're old enough to read this book. So she took the book and opened it up to like a random page and said, here, read this to me. So I had to read like a paragraph. And she kind of looked at me. She opens it up to another page. Here, read this to me. And so I read a couple of paragraphs, two or three sections. She goes, okay, you can check that book out.
You passed the test.
I passed the test, and I could still remember laying on the living room floor reading that book and just being blown away. And it was, of course, it was about robots, but one of the robot stories was about hyperspace, hyperdrive, you know, being able to jump. And I remember that kind of really got me going. And then another book that I read, and I think like 1962 or something, it was, I'd like to look back when it came out, was by Arthur C. Clarke. It was Man in Space, and it actually talked about geosynchronous satellites. And I remember really thinking that one over. So how's that work? You know, they stay in the same place. And it was all about communication satellites. He's actually had written about it back in 1944 or 45, right at the end of World War II, had proposed how this would work. And he didn't exactly invent it, but the concept of it, he kind of popularized. So I remember reading that book, and that really got me going. And, of course, just being alive during the space race, I read a lot of books. I can't remember. Those were two that I could remember that really stood out.
I've never read that particular book, but Arthur C. Clarke's another one of my favorites. I read 2001, and then he wrote one of the seminal sort of first contact stories, Childhood's End, I think it's called.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But yeah, him and Asimov, both fantastic writers, just great books.
Yeah. I saw the movie 2001 when I was in ninth grade.
The Stanley Kubrick movie?
Yeah.
With the
Obelisk.
Spake there, yep. Zarathustra opening.
Yeah, Thus Spake Zarathustra.
Yep. And I remember not quite getting it. I was very confused at watching the movie.
I felt the same way. I later came to love Kubrick, but I didn't get it when I was younger either.
Yeah, but when I read the book, a book. I read the book in high school then.
I bought
it. Blew me away.
I bought the anniversary
hashtag
edition of that book.
The book is better.
They had the last version of that book I bought. The price on the jacket was $20.01. All right, so that ends the interview proper. So one of the new segments we're going to be doing as part of this new incarnation, this new iteration of our What's Up Peoria podcast is something we call Poet's Corner, where we select a poem that we think relates in some way to the theme or the guest of the discussion, and then we talk about it a little bit. So for today, I thought it was apropos. We have chosen When I Heard the Learned Astronomer, by Walt Whitman, which I will now recite, and then we'll just have a quick discussion. So here we go. When I heard the learned astronomer, when the proofs, the figures, were ranged in columns before me, when I was shown the charts and diagrams to add, divide, and measure them, when I sitting heard the astronomer where he lectured with much applause in the lecture room, how soon, unaccountable, I became tired and sick, till rising and gliding out, I wandered off by myself in the mystical, moist night air, and from time to time looked up in perfect silence at the stars. So I'm a poetry lover, and even though Whitman's not my favorite, this one in particular really spoke to me. You know, you can talk all you want about the stars and about the universe and about the equations and about the way things work, but I feel like there's no substitute for actually getting out there and looking up into the night sky. So I was just, I was interested to get your thoughts on that poem.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I definitely got that sense of like how there's always the real life experience is always going to be more powerful and impactful to you than being told about it. You know, the whole show don't tell that they tell you to do in writing or in film, that there's something about experience it personally that it makes it more real.
Yes, and all the scientific jargon is important, but for the average person, that can be kind of overwhelming sometimes. And we kind of, sometimes we get kind of a little bit geeky at our club meetings when one of our speakers comes in. Sometimes it gets a little technical, and I have found myself getting pretty drowsy-eyed a few times.
Nodding off a little.
So, you take that information as best you can sometimes, and then you walk outside and take a look. And it does, I think, give you a little bit better appreciation for what you're looking at. But there's two levels. There's just the beauty and the beautiful aesthetics of the sky, especially when there's not a lot of light pollution.
Right.
That goes along and is complemented by the scientific knowledge back behind it.
I was speaking with one of my coworkers about the poem, and she said it almost sounded like it was anti-science, and I'm certainly not anti-science. I'm not advocating that point of view at all, but I do think that, you know, sometimes science, it tends to sort of atomize and anatomize things, you know, to the extent where you kind of lose sight of the big picture, as it were, that sort of, that primal sort of experience of just, you know, looking up at the night sky.
Well, we are visual, very visual animals, aren't we? And it really has a big impact on you. I think we kind of search out those things.
Yeah, earlier when we were talking about, you know, people kind of not having a relationship, people who live in cities and don't have all this awful light pollution and aren't really able to see the stars or the sky and not really having a relationship with the night sky the way that the way that people used to. I thought this poem kind of speaks to that a little bit, you know.
Yeah. So thank you again for coming to interview with us. We really appreciate all the fun you've done with the library and getting to be on our podcast. We're super excited. And I think we're going to sign off now.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today. Well, I love the Plywood Observatory story. I'm going to take that one with me.
Well, it was my pleasure to be here and clear skies and keep looking up.
Thanks, John.
By the time you hear this, the Peoria Main Library event will be over. However, our Sunrise Mountain Library event is on Saturday, October 12th from 7 to 8:30. We are asking people to use the Perfect Mind application software that the City of Peoria provides as a way of just knowing how many people to expect at this fun outdoor after-hours event.
Thanks for listening to the What's Up Peoria podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes. If you'd like to connect with our team, please email us at whatsuppeoria@peoriaaz.gov. Until next time, this is What's Up Peoria?